So says the Hebrew folktale. A man came from Baal Shalisha, and he brought the prophet Elijah some bread of the first harvest, 20 loaves of barley bread, along with some fresh grain in a sack. And Elijah said, "Give it to the people gathered here and let them eat." The man replied, "How can I set a mere 20 loaves before such a crowd? There's over 100 here." But the prophet said, "Just give loaves to the people and let them eat. For so says the Eternal, they shall eat and have some left over." So he set the loaves before them, and when they had eaten, they did indeed find they had some left over, just as the Eternal had said. I imagine that this is a familiar enough story, even if those aren't the words or of the same culture through which you know it. It's the Christian loaves and fishes. It's the secular Hail Mary before the guests arrive, each having forgotten to RSVP their plus ones. Have faith. There will be enough. That's the way that I hear this scripture text, at least. I guess I know that others have thought it to mean that through some miracle outside of our own works, the food multiplied. It became more. But that's not what the scripture reading says. It never says, and then bread became more, and that bread became more, and that bread became more too, so that everyone had as much as they wanted and more. It simply says, they shall eat and have some left over. I've been thinking as we head into this holiday season, dinners with friends or family with whom we have little friendship, Black Friday competition that sets us up against one another as if we are characters in the Hunger Games, and all the joy that cannot offset the stress or vice versa, I have been thinking about what it means to share. About stories as ancient as storytelling, deemed miraculous from tongues that sing and speak and ache by different sound, but all in all get to the same message. There was little, hundreds gathered, there was more than enough. If this story told throughout the centuries by different peoples and at different times is true, big T or little t, I leave that to you to decide for today. If we could try to imagine it, hard as it may be, means a few didn't grab a lot. And a lot didn't have to divvy out the crumbs. It means someone, enough someones, believed they could be fed or housed or held or heard or could hold power not only with what was before them, but with and because of those who sought the same. There was enough, more than enough, an abundance, in fact, enough believed. And if this story is true, it means that the clinging that comes when we are asked to share, I know that you know it, the reactive holding, the new want for what we didn't even notice before someone else takes interest, the hunger that growls past need. If this story is true, that clinging was somehow placed aside or maybe wrestled down for want to believe that the fear of sharing, a place at the table, a portion of food, a time to be heard, affirmed, held, every crumb of bread, gifts given, that this fear that what was ours would be taken, leave us with less, leave us without safety, security, some identity as someone who doesn't want, that this fear could be humbled by the holy possibility of enough. I know it's hard to imagine. It is for me. Maybe it's even a little anti-American to dream it. I remember an American friend of mine who's married to a Brit once telling me of her husband's disgust at our use of language around eating. The English would ask, "Would you like some more?" and reply, "No thanks, I'm satiated." They had had enough. But we Americans, the man reflected, would you like some more? And what do we respond? It's so funny. First service said yes too, and that's so not what I thought you were going to say. But it's perfect because yes, we do say yes, we say sure. But then when finally we get to the point where we need to say no, we justify that no by saying, I am stuffed. That's right. Stuffed to the brim, past capacity. Sharing is a learned behavior, and it is an awkward one. I live in it every day. I have been watching my child navigate the landscape of play spaces, of children older and younger and the same age as he, and watching as they walk upon his imaginings and creations that he has been working hard at. He has been putting his attention and love into, but now other children decide they want it too. Or maybe more boldly, now it's theirs. And parents, what happens next? I trust you've been in this situation before. The expectation to come. What? Share. Yeah, share. The expectation is that I will say, they are younger, she doesn't know better, I'm sorry that happened, can they play with it now? And I'm just going to tell you up front today, I think that's pretty messed up. Why? Why should my child, who has created and cultivated and cared for something, now simply give it up because someone else wants it? Why does this child who wants get priority over the child who tills? A few weeks ago, we sang, "This land is your land," and in the days that followed, I was offered the reminder that some among us hear this song very differently than Guthrie imagined, than many of us intended in our singing that Sunday. Into land, we look out adoringly to the mountains, fields, and plains, and claimed by another, divvied up to you and me. What do we do with the expectation that it should be shared when it wasn't ours to begin with? Sharing is a learned behavior. This Thanksgiving, I am thinking about sharing, about the miracle that is possible when we unlearn that sharing is bound up in want, envy, power, and ownership, a colonization, a supremacy, a bullying that is hidden behind a soft and gentle word, a rewritten myth we'd prefer. And instead, come to know the sacred exchange of seeing within one another an essential sameness, knitted together by needs and the joy that comes when we can fulfill those for one another. There was little, hundreds gathered. There was more than enough. I don't know what awaits you this week or thereafter into the holiday rush. I do know that the season to come, with its expectations and wants, with its hurts and hopes, can weigh mightily on our hearts, and oftentimes push us to lose sight of the scripture we hope our lives will one day write. But we can unlearn the push, unlearn the rush, remember the intention, be surprised by the miracle. After all, sharing is a learned behavior. Mark Bellatini has reflected, did they just share the bread, I wonder, without reaching out to each other? Did they eat in perfect and awful silence, tense and withdrawn, their backs turned? I doubt it. I bet they faced each other. I bet they spoke with each other. I bet they shared other stories of other meals and other times. They gave thanks, and I bet they stopped worrying about what they did not have: fame, prestige, honor, the perfect job, the perfect relationship, the safety net, the sure answer, the final meaning. What are you filling in to that litany? I bet what really nourished their hunger on that day was not a few barley loaves, but tomorrow's bread, bread not yet kneaded, punched, or baked. I bet they feasted on their hopes for a world where hunger was no more, and anyone could come to the table without anyone else making a face turning away. Tomorrow, everyone can come. He concludes, the breaking and sharing of bread was one thing, but as they looked into each other's eyes, they knew in their heart that breaking each other was quite something else and was no good. It reminded them that the really good things in life have to do with honor and respect and gratitude and a turning away from the desire to punish and hurt and break others for not being just like them. This Thanksgiving, wherever you are, whomever you're with, whether they are beloved or bewilder you, I pray our bread will become more than bread. Our assumptions will grow curiosities. And where we are stuffed, we will share. For there are miracles to speak of, and we have only just begun to know them.